We're doing Mishlei. We're up to what's called the 12th chapter, the 23rd Pasuk. Shlomo HaMelech says, Adam Arum Kose Da'at. A person who has cunning covers up what he knows. Meaning, a person doesn't always have to share what he knows. One of the traits of someone who has cunning, one of the traits of someone who's gained that intelligence, is that he keeps his intelligence to himself and he knows when, in what scenario, to what person he should share what he knows. Part of being smart is that a person is humble in his knowledge. Velev kisilin yikra ivelet. But the heart of the fool always calls out. He has a lot to say. You always hear his voice. And in essence, what he's calling out is he's telling everyone, look at how stupid I am. You have that. I don't know if you guys have encountered that. Sometimes you have people who are quick to talk. You always hear their voice. And in fact, the fact that you always hear their voice is because they don't really have anything intelligent to say, but they're always showing everyone. There's a saying in English that really... So that's a pasuk in Mishlei. That's a pasuk in Mishlei. The saying in English is, better be quiet and let people think you're a fool.
Then open your mouth and prove it.
Correct.
That's modern, isn't it? That's good. That sounds very modern. That's our problem.
Right.
It's probably just especially relevant to us today.
Yad charutzim timshol umiyah tiye lamas. Yad charutzim, the hand of those that are honest, or the hand of those that are diligent. When a person does things the way they should, quickly, diligently, so then timshol, that person ultimately gains leadership. That person is profitable. Umiya, but the hand of he who tries to deceive, tihiyeh lamas, ultimately it wears him down. There are two approaches that we can take when we are a worker, when we are hired help. You have the people that work quickly. We'll take a small example. They hire you to sweep. So there are those that quickly sweep up the floor and they finish their job quickly. And then you have those that are quick to look for the nooks and crannies to shove the dirt under the bookcase, all kinds of places. Let me see how I can get away with it. Now, it's a certain personality. When a person tries to deceive, so it's part of their personality, and ultimately it wears themselves down. Meaning, you're going to fool some of the people some of the time, but it catches up with a person. There's only so far you can go. You're not going to work your way up the corporate ladder by deceiving everyone into thinking you did something. If you work diligently and if you work quickly, so then people take note and you move up. Yad charutzim, the hand of those that work honestly, diligently, swiftly, timshol. Ultimately, they grow wealthier. Ultimately, they work their way up the ladder. The next pasuk I want you to pay close attention to, because most people in the world do not know what the pasuk says. They know what the Gemara says on the pasuk, but they don't know the pasuk. The pasuk says, "De'aga ve'levish yashchena." If there is worry in a person's heart, yashchena. What does yashchena mean? He should put it down. He should remove it. He should change his thoughts. He shouldn't focus on it. Now, the Gemara has a discussion. How do we read this pasuk? Yashchena Or yisichena, say it over to a friend. Get it off your heart. So everyone quotes the pasuk, thinking they know what it means, what it says. Da'agav levish yisichena. They don't know. It's not what the pasuk says. I was on a date, and I don't remember what we were discussing. And I quoted the pasuk, da'agav levish yishchena. So the girl makes this modest smile and says, no, the pasuk says yisichena. I said, okay. Not going to argue with her. Fine. Da'agav elev ish yashchena. The pasuk says, remove the thought. One of the things we have to do when we're worried is not harp on it. Yeah, a part of life is dealing with worry. I have a friend whose business partner was diagnosed with a very serious illness. And he was always out doing the sales, and his friend was the one who was running the heart of the business. So now he suddenly realizes he has a whole business to run. He doesn't know how to run it. So he enters panic mode. And he says, what am I going to do? And it's a real worry. He has a family to feed. So he goes to his doctor. And he tells the doctor, you know, I'm panicking. I want you to give me a pill to calm me down. And the doctor is a brilliant from Jew. And the doctor says, listen here, sit down, young man. I want to talk to you. I know you're worried. And it's legitimate that you're worried. But I want you to know that in life, people face tragedies and people face trying circumstances, and no one gets through life without it. It's true. Everyone has to deal with terribly hard times. No one goes through this 120 years just breezing through it. Think back to the Jewish people standing at the waters of the Yam Suf. They're standing there and they look behind and the Egyptians are there, and they look to the front and the waters are there, and they look to the left, there's a desert that no one can traverse. And they look to the right, there's a desert no one can traverse. They got nowhere to run. What do you do then? Doc, give me a pill. No, deal. Moshe turns to God and says, Ribono Shel Olam. What does God answer Moshe? Don't talk to me now. Get moving. So the doctor says, look, I could give you a pill, but I think you got to learn from what the Ribono Shel Olam told Moshe. You got a problem. You're right. Get moving. Deal. Don't look for that out. You will master this at this point of your life. You'll master it for the next time you reach this point again. Da'aga ve'levish. It is normal. People have worries. People have fears. People have concerns. You can't go through life without it. Not if you're normal. If you're normal, there are going to be things that perturb you. Yashchena. You have to be able to compartmentalize. Dale Carnegie wrote a famous work called How to Influence People. Right? How to Win Friends and Influence People. Dale Carnegie. The Carnegie Institute. But he wrote another book called How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. And that book focuses on the idea of compartmentalizing. Being able to say, there's a real problem here. And I'm not going to focus on it now. I'm going to move forward in other areas of my life. You have to be able to partition. I have a very good friend. He's probably the only person I would dare say that I know is a tzaddik. And his wife was dying. She was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, metastasized. Tumors in every part of her body, and she had maximum a half a year left to live. And we're standing there talking, and his wife says, you know, our 1.5-year-old has to be toilet trained. And I'm hearing, I don't want to leave him a baby that's not yet toilet trained. That's what I'm hearing. She's not saying that. So you ask yourself, lady, you got so much to deal with. Doctors and everything else in your life. But this was a brilliant tzaddikus who knew she was gone. She knew she wasn't going to live. She knew she didn't have more than a half a year left. But she said, okay, that's one problem. But there's another issue in my life. I have a 1.5-year-old that needs to be toilet trained. So we're going to toilet train. And you know what she did? When she passed away, that kid was toilet trained. She did what she said. How do you do that? How do you think of toilet training a kid? All you want to do is hug him and kiss him. What do you care if they're wearing diapers? Let him deal. No. When you can compartmentalize, then even in the most trying situation, you move forward. You move forward on the fronts that you decide are important to you. And the way to do that is yashchena. The pasuk is giving us a formula for life. Sometimes you got to get it out of your head. You put it down. Because what happens with worries is that they tend to blossom, and then you can't see beyond them. What happens with worries is that it's like taking a coin and putting it in front of your eye, and suddenly you can't see anything else. The only thing you see is the worry. Comes the pasuk and says, Yashchena, put it down! There's a whole world in front of you. I have a friend who had millions in the stock market. Millions, all invested. And when the market crashed in 2008, he was wiped out, finished. Went from being a millionaire to having zero. Now what? So the nature of man is that his problem is huge before his eyes. He can't see beyond that. He doesn't know how he's going to wake up tomorrow morning. And then you say, stop and think and ask yourself, what's really important in life? Now this guy was single to the age of about 45. He met his wife, and they got married. She was also pretty old, like 37, 38. And then they had a bunch of kids. So you ask yourself, wait, what's important in life? You have a wife, you have kids, you have a family, you don't have money. You know what? You didn't have money 20 years ago either. Somehow you got these millions. Okay, money comes, money goes. You have to figure out how you're going to live tomorrow. You have to figure out how you're going to pay your bills tomorrow. But you also have to get perspective. The important things in life, you have. There's a certain very important tool you need called money. You need it. I'm not saying you don't. But let's get perspective here. The important things you have. You're healthy, she's healthy. You have kids, you have a life, you have a family. Now you got to make it work. Okay. Yashchena, take the worry, put it down a little bit. Don't focus only on that. Yeah, you got to find a job. Right, you'll find the job. You got to find the source income. Right. You had a certain life you were accustomed to the last 10 years. Correct. Not saying it's easy. I'm not. But a person has to be able to take the worry and put it down. Yeah?
What happens when the issue you have is you don't have the money? Or when you don't have the situation where the health is going
to be? That's why I gave the example of my friend's wife. I began with that.
But in the end, she has to give you toilet training. But what does she have this? And the husband left with, he has to deal that he no longer has a wife.
Right.
Give this toilet training.
Right. That's another tool which isn't from this pasuk. But if you mention it, we'll discuss it. So, he's faced with a situation that his wife is dying, the doctors have no solution to offer her, and now he has to deal. So, there are a few tools in such a situation. The first tool is for a person to realize that there's a God controlling the world. The stronger a person connects to that concept, the more they can be at peace with what they're contending with in life. I often think that when a person is an atheist, an agnostic, I don't know how they can enjoy life. Because then everything's meaningless, and the only thing that exists are your emotions. And you know what? You don't have too much control over that either. You have a certain amount of control. There's so many things that affect us. If you don't believe in a higher order controlling things, it's really hard to enjoy life. because then anything could happen at any time and it has no meaning. And there's really zero value to life. You know, you could help people, you could not help people, it doesn't really matter. So when a person can connect to that idea, he gains, firstly, a healthy perspective. He can deal. It's healthy on multiple levels. A, I can talk to God, I can pray. There's a being that controls what goes on down here. The doctors aren't God. So there's a certain amount of hope that a person should have, and daven. But there's a B. The second point, the B, is we have to come to terms with this very difficult concept that there are certain things that are beyond our control. Now, there are two approaches to that. I can say it's beyond my control because there's Mother Nature, there's health, there's genetics. Or I can say it's beyond my control and God's controlling. Those are two different approaches. Now, either one is important. It's easier and healthier to approach life with the approach that God is controlling it. Notice I'm speaking like a secular person. I'm not talking religiously. When I say healthier, meaning I'm not discussing the truth. I'm speaking from a psychological perspective. If I approach my troubles with the attitude that it's beyond my control, period, so to some degree I can live with life. Because it's beyond my control, I can't do anything. Okay, onward. What am I going to spend my time worrying about? Will Iran nuke Israel? Like I said to one guy, you're worried the Arabs are going to attack. So you buy one gun and another gun and an M16 and an Uzi. Then you're worried maybe they're still going to attack. So you get yourself a bulletproof vest. I know people like that. When the second Intifada started, you had people who would drive like madmen on the road. Before they'd enter the car, everyone in the car put on a helmet and a bulletproof vest. And they cocked their gun and they started driving. There are people like that. Now, if you say to yourself, certain things are beyond my control. Now, if Iran wants to shoot a nuclear missile at us, my cocked gun doesn't help me too much. My helmet doesn't help me, nor does my bulletproof vest. What do I do now? So I can sit here biting my nails. Who knows what's going to happen? Or I can say, wait a second. I have to live a normal life. I have to deal. I have to get perspective. What are the dangers I can deal with? What are the dangers I cannot deal with? Some things you can't deal with. Not my job. I can't deal. So if I can't deal, I don't have to spend time worrying. The things I can deal, I deal. What I can't, I can't. So that means if this woman says, what can I do and what can't I do? I cannot do more than toilet train this kid, give as much love as possible to every child and my husband. Beyond that, it's beyond my control. Being that she's a tremendous tzaddikess, she says beyond that. She says, Ribon Shalom's running the show. He knows exactly what he's doing. I have no clue what he's doing. I find it very difficult to understand what he has in mind. But he knows what he's doing. So it's in his hands. Then it's even easier. But that's another very powerful tool that every person has to use. We are all faced with circumstances that are way beyond our control. And when a person can do that, and again, I began with the secular approach, that's Dale Carnegie, then we can live life. And if we don't do that, then there's no end to how nervous we can get. And if we think about it, it's emotion, it's not logic. And the emotion really stems from fear, and the fear stems from lack of control, and the lack of control stems from that desire to control and kicking God out of the picture. Don't want you to decide for me. I want to decide what my future is going to hold. Well, sorry, you don't. We don't know if our heart's going to tick tomorrow morning. So coming back to the religious perspective, you could really trace it back to that. If I can recognize he's running the show, so then, okay, then what's left for me to do? I'll do what I have to do. I do it more, I do it less, I'll work on doing it more. But then I can compartmentalize much better. I must do that. The better we get at doing that, the healthier life we lead.
So the people who were wearing helmets and cocking their guns and driving quickly, they were doing their hishtadlut. They were doing what they felt was necessary, what they could possibly do in a dangerous situation. Put on helmets, make sure your weapon's ready, because it doesn't make sense to drive at a leisurely pace and not have a gun and not have a helmet. Then Hashem saying, you're stupid, you're going into an area that's dangerous, and you're not preparing yourself. There's a fine line saying, Hashem controls the world, and therefore I can take a leisurely stroll into Shechem and say, where's the Arabs at? No, he can't.
I think there's a balance, and that's where a person has to learn Torah to learn what the balance is. I agree with you that people go off balance, and they call it faith. I agree with you that people do stupid things and say it's faith. No, that's not what we mean. But there is also going beyond the level of hishtadlut, where a person goes too far, and basically what he's saying to God is, I don't want you to run this show, I'm going to run the show. There is that balance. And a person has to check himself. Why am I working so hard at this? I have no issue with people who take shark cartilage because they think that's going to prevent cancer. Halachically, it might not be permissible, but that's a different question. But I'm saying they think that that's what's going to prevent it. Fine, but then you have to ask yourself, wait a second. Science hasn't proven it. Why are you doing this? Meaning sometimes hishtadlut shows that I'm willing to go beyond rational means. I'm willing to do anything to ensure I'm in control. And that's where people end up doing paganism, and that's where people end up going to all kinds of far-out idiocies in the name of hishtadlut. What hishtadlut? Where does that make sense? Where'd you get that one from?
Would that come in like skulot? That kind of thing?
You're definitely dancing a fine line there, when it is and when it isn't. Sometimes it is that you have a whole chapter in Shabbos that discusses when you cross the line with segulot, when they become prohibited as idol worship. Yeah, sometimes yes, sometimes no. So people will swear, I'm not taking off this red ribbon. I shower with it. I'm never taking it off. That's going to protect you. Right, okay. Fine. So I'm saying there is a fine line, but it's that same desire. Let me control God. Let me control my future. I'll do this amulet. That's going to work. So that's where the ishtadlut crosses a line. And it's harmful even on a psychological level, because it's not real. You do not control God. You do not control the future. So then a person is trying to control something that's beyond him, and he's bound to be disappointed, and then it gets even worse. So let me try this, and let me try that. That's one of the dangers with alternative medicine. Because people are willing to go beyond the realms of logic. It stems from the same place. I want to control. But there's a realm within you which you can, and then there's a realm where you can't.
So, but there seems to be a fair stream within Judaism that says so-and-so's coming to town. For X amount of money, she's a mumche in the pouring of the lead ceremony. And no, you're laughing. And people are walking. Yeah. It's I'm reading these things.
It's ridiculous.
And is this become paganism? Is this faith healing? Is this... Why is there this stream in Judaism that seems to say we're super religious, we believe God controls the world, but on the other hand, we're going to do all these things to pull the levers to get us to have children, because we'll do this school. It's very murky.
Always was. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What is, I didn't understand what you said about alternative medicine and...
I'll give you an example.
Okay.
You have a person who's healthy and well and everything's fine, and he's 18 years old, and he has no worries in the world, but he says, I want to get a blood test every month, just in case maybe there's a problem with my blood count, maybe there's something happening, I want to check. So you say to yourself, wait a second, why? Because you want to control your future. Meaning, there's a realm where you say normal people go for a normal checkup and do a normal amount of hishtadlut, a normal amount of effort to stay healthy. At some point, it goes beyond the norm. And when you cross that point, what you're basically saying is, God's not going to take me by surprise. I'm going to ensure I know what's going on in every minute. It doesn't work. It's not right, and it's an improper approach to life. You have to approach life with a certain amount of faith and say, I'm going to do what's normal as far as my investment in protecting myself and in being healthy. And beyond that is not right. And when people go to all kinds of alternative medicines, very often what they're doing is they're going beyond the norm. They're saying, I will ensure, I will do everything. You know, I have friends who have black teeth because they decided that they're going to take, I don't remember if it was calcium supplements or iron supplements, above and beyond what science recommended. So it destroyed their teeth. I don't remember if it was the iron or the calcium. It's another guy I know who's on psychiatric treatment, and the doctors say he kicked his brain. He destroyed his brain because he took a tremendous amount of iron supplements. He took too much iron supplements. Eventually, it caused him to have all kinds of psychiatric issues, to the point of medication. So you ask yourself, why? I understand you want to be healthy, but why are you going beyond what science recommends? Why are you doing things that just no one recommends? Why do people go beyond that? Why are people so careful to cover everything? God's not going to catch me by surprise. I'm going to keep everything covered. I'm going to keep all my bases covered. It doesn't work that way. And that's where I say there's a fine line between what's right hishtadlut and what's going above and beyond. I'm saying you should have life insurance, you should have medical insurance, you should take the exams the doctors tell you to take. You go within the norm of being a healthy person. All that's legitimate. Fine. Makes sense. But people sometimes go beyond that. And they go beyond that to degrees that are illogical. And then you ask yourself, why? And I think at the root of it is this attitude. I'm going to make sure that God can't make me sick. I'm going to do everything. It's not logical. And it doesn't work. So, again, coming back to the subject at hand.
Sounds like teaching.
All right. That's an example of it. The subject at hand is, what do you do with your worries? So we said, the Pasuk recommends Yeshchena. Put them down. Don't let them encompass your life. Don't let them cover everything. Put them down. We discussed that sometimes one of the ways of dealing with a problem is also to realize it's beyond my control. And I can't do anything, so I'm going to have to deal with that. And we said that people have this tendency that's borderline paganism to want to control that which is beyond their control. And that's where we entered alternative medicine and other things where people go too far. So part of controlling worry is put it out of your mind. Don't let it encompass your life. And another part of it is the recognition, I do not control everything. God controls it. And now I'm going to have to live with that. We have to live with it in every step of our lives if we only think about it. We don't choose our parents. We don't choose our health. There's very little that we choose. Yeah, a person can destroy his health, but there's so much that you don't choose. You don't choose your height. You don't choose your cholesterol. Yes, your diet will affect your cholesterol. But you don't control your thyroid. Yes, your diet, your amount of iodine will affect your thyroid. Right. There's a certain realm which you do control. But there's a much broader realm which you do not control. You don't control your genes. There's a million things you do not control. There's a small realm which you do control. And the sooner a person comes to that realization, the sooner he can live at peace with what's going on around him, because there's that much which I do not control, so I can't be at peace with it. I can't do anything about it, so let me come to terms with it. An insurance agent once told me that the wealthier people are, the more insurance they buy. I asked him, what do you mean? He was trying to get me to take his services. He said to me, you know, this millionaire takes my services, and this millionaire takes my services. And I looked at him and I said, why would they take your services? These are people who are so wealthy, they own so many buildings. Like, what's he can offer them that they can't cover themselves? It shocked me. So he said to me, You'd be surprised. The wealthier people are, the more insurance they tend to buy. And afterwards, it dawned on me that what they're trying to do is control their future. They're trying to say, I'm buying insurance. I'm going to buy what money can't buy. I will insure that I will have all the medical treatment in the future, etc., etc. Okay?
So when you say that someone would take things too far, is it say they pre-pack a backpack or something with things that might need, even if the majority of the time it's not needed?
So that's being safe. We do keep emergency supplies, and we do keep a first aid kit, and we realize that certain things happen, and that's why you have to be prepared for them, to a degree. To a degree. When we travel, we bring along a thermometer, and we bring along ECMO, because we've had the fine experience of being in all kinds of places when our kids got ill, and it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and their fever was raging, and then we had to go knocking on the doors of people in the yeshuv to find someone who has ECMO for the kids. So you say it happens once a year, twice a year. It won't necessarily happen on Shabbos. It won't necessarily happen here. But it pays to be prepared, right? But would you say, look, I have a whole medicine cabinet with me. So whenever I travel for Shabbos, let me take it all with me. Do I know? Maybe this will happen and I'll need Fenistil against allergic reactions. Maybe that'll happen and I'll need the silver roll against burns. And maybe the third thing will happen, and I'll need the drops on the ear to numb the ear. And maybe the gums will start hurting, and I'll need the drops to numb the gums. You know, once you bring up kids, you start seeing there are so many different things that sit in your medicine cabinet, because kids do every so often need A and B and C and D and E and F, right? That does happen. That's why you end up stocking your medicine cabinet. But you don't buy it in advance. And you don't take it wherever you go. And when a person does, that's when he's crossing the limit. There's a small amount that makes sense to take along, and beyond that doesn't. So the first part of the pasuk said, "De agave levish," when something's scaring a person, when there's a worry in the heart of a person, yashchena, put it down. V'davar tov yisamechena. The literal meaning of these words are v'davar tov, and if you bring a good thing into the heart, yisamechena, that will make the heart happy. So Chazal interpreted the pasuk, learn Torah, that will make you happy. You'll be able to overcome the worries of your heart. Get carried away by the Torah you're learning. You guys should never need this, but in life people do need this. I could tell you that there were different occasions where there were trying times, and by having an MP3 player and listening to a shiur, being able to get carried away to another world. I was sitting next to a person that was supposed to die within 24 hours. And I was there to be with the person. The person didn't even know I was there. So I'm sitting next to this relative, knowing that we're never going to have a conversation again. Knowing that all I'm doing there is doing that respect and ensuring that they get whatever treatment they should get to prolong whatever minutes or hours that their life could be prolonged. But there's not much I can offer the person, right? It's over. So you daven, you say a perek of Tehillim, you say another perek of Tehillim, you say another perek of Tehillim, you finish the book of Tehillim, fine, you do whatever you do. And at some point, it's 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, what do? So I had an MP3 player with me, and I started learning. And it shocked me how you could get engrossed in Torah, and as trying a situation is, and as difficult as it is emotionally, you could go to another world. You're standing next to the person. You still see the person. You know what's coming. And you can shift in other world. David HaMelech said it about himself too. It's one of the gifts Hashem gave us. Davar tov yisamechena. Take something that is the essence of good. That's what Torah is. And you can make your heart happy. So that's a second interpretation in the pasuk. Chazal tell us, davar tov, suffuse the heart with that which is good, deal in Torah, yisamechena, and you will gladden the heart. There's a third interpretation. Remember, Chazal interpreted the verse as Da'aga v'levish, when there's a worry in a person's heart, Yesichena, say it over to a friend. Guys, you have to know how to be that friend. To be that friend means to be able to sit there and do this. To nod your head solemnly and listen. People don't always want advice. Sometimes all they want is a shoulder to cry on. Someone who they feel understands them. Chazal say, "Al tenachem adam b'sha'a shemeito munach lefanav." Don't try comforting a person when their deceased is still before them. There are the moments of trauma when a person doesn't want your advice. He doesn't want your comfort. He doesn't want to hear it's still going to get better. What he wants is, mourn with me. Be with me. Listen to me. So Chazal say, Da'aga v'levish yesichena. Tell it over to a friend. You got to know how to be that friend. V'davar tov yesamechena. But then there are the moments when a friend's job is to comfort. And a good friend knows when to listen and knows when it's his job to start talking and comforting so that he can take the worry out of his friend's heart. A friend's job is also to help a person overcome the worries. Davar tov, to tell him something good, to help him get comfort, and yisamechena, help him to be happy and overcome the worry. So that's another interpretation. A fourth interpretation. De'aga, when worry comes into a person's heart, yashchena, minimize it. Don't give it the weight that you ordinarily would. Try to look at it as something small. V'davar tov, and it would be even good if you could strengthen yourself, yisamechena, to be able to view it as something good that came to you. Meaning sometimes things happen and you tell yourself, nothing good can come out of this. This is terrible. I can't believe it. Stop. Step one, try to minimize how you view it. Step two, try to see how good could come out of it. We've said it before, we'll say it again, the famous story of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. He applied for a position as Rav. He had no money left. They accepted him as Rav of a town. They signed the contract. And this was his last opportunity to have some kind of income without leaving his whole family. So he gets this position, and it's a yomtiv in the house. They're dancing, they're rejoicing, it's phenomenal, and they're preparing and they're packing. And there are 2 months left till he travels with his whole family to that town. And just before it's time for him to travel, he gets a letter in the mail. And the letter says, "We regret to inform you, the committee has decided to appoint someone else to that position." And as a grown man, he bursts into tears, as does his wife. They are devastated. They realize this is it. They have nothing else to search for in Europe. And with that, he accepts a position as Rav in Canada. He travels by sea, leaving his wife and children behind in Europe, and goes to the position of Rav in Canada. Takes the position of Rav in Canada. And he's alone. And his wife is alone. And the family's been divided. It's what they prayed and tried and did everything in their life to ensure it doesn't happen. And then one of the wealthy people in town tell him, "Why are you without your wife and child?" And he says, "Well, I'm waiting to save up enough money to bring them across the sea." So the man tells him, "Fine, you have a salary from the killer. I'll lend you the money. I'll put up the money, bring them over, and you'll pay me off as your salary comes in." So he brings his wife and child over. And then the Holocaust breaks out. And that town where he was supposed to be Rav, no one remains alive. Not the Rav, nor a soul from that community. The whole town is annihilated. So when Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky gets the letter saying, "We regret to inform you, we've chosen someone else," he knows, he's heard. Someone on the board had a relative, and he decided to give the position to his relative and push the whole board in that direction. It wasn't fair. It wasn't kind. He could look at it and say, this is terrible, this is unfair, we signed a contract, how could they do that? And they haven't decided that the other one's going to be better for the community, it's just politics. The man on the board says, my relative, and he pushes everyone and he gets the deal through. Tells us Shlomo HaMelech, v'davar tov, you'd be much better off in life if yisamechena. You could convince yourself to be happy about that which seems to you destructive. It seems to you destructive. Learn to be happy with it. Later on, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky looks back and says, saved my life. Had I had that position, no one would be left. Saved my life. But at the moment, what does he see? He sees all his hopes are dashed. And so many times in our life, we're faced with junctures where we know what we want. And we think we know how we get there. And suddenly God takes us on a detour, or so we think. It's a totally different path than what we had in mind. Yisamechena, says Shlomo HaMelech, davar tov. It's much better for you if you can view it and say, there's something good in this for me. There's a master who's planning all of this. Most people have a very hard time doing this, and that's why Shlomo HaMelech says, davar tov, it's a good thing. Try.